Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, I love seeing you around the Berkshires, and I know you've been there a lot. Anything that you're noticing in this new part of your district?
Well, I mean, I've been very pleased with what I've witnessed. I've built a good relationship, I think, with the elected officials, the appointed officials, the labor community, and the business community. I think trying to grow our way out of this economic morass that we've witnessed is going to be done at the local level. And there's some really neat things that I've come to learn about the Berkshires during the course of the last 2 years, not the least of which is the thriving arts community, the transformation, I think, of the achievements that we've witnessed in Pittsfield. You have this beautiful community in Great Barrington, and I was with the head of Massport and a large group in Boston just a couple of days ago, and they were bragging about the Berkshires and the economy, and I had the head of the state tourism system there as well. And I think that what everybody understands, you never want to have an economy locally that isn't balanced. You want some manufacturing, obviously, you want financial services, you want agriculture, and you want a thriving arts community, and you want a good, strong educational system. And the Berkshires, really, they have all of those. So I think that, for me, has been a very, very pleasant experience.
The FAA has come out with some new regulations. You can bring knives on planes. I saw a little squib this morning about your opposition to that. You want to tell us why?
Well, I think that it's an untested theory. And you're talking to somebody who in North Carolina, I think a couple of years ago, or South Carolina, where I was changing planes, I had trouble, even though I had gotten through one TSA checkpoint, I was not able in the next one to bring shaving cream through.
Right.
And I thought, geez, if you can't bring shaving cream through, what does this say about the use of these small pocket knives or pin knives? Now, the TSA administrator, he's going to offer defense in the next couple of days of his position on this, so we'll have to wait and see what he proposes. But, you know, when I was coming from Boston yesterday, because I'd been in Boston, what was striking to me was just the kind of how packed the plane was. And there is, with the plane, when they're doing much better in terms of getting out of the dock and into the air, you can also see some of the tension that arises as the staff tries to move people through and to move people into their seating quickly so that the plane will take off on time. And I think that there are a lot of considerations here that we will revisit at a different time once we have more sophisticated checkpoint screening in place. But for the moment, I would prefer that we not have pocket knives on the plane.
Have you ever thought about what you would do? I know it's a little off topic, but have you ever thought about what you would do if you saw a plane hijacking going on while you were on the plane?
Well, I don't think anybody knows for certain, but the neighborhood I come from in Springfield, I can tell you, I'd be happy to respond.
Yeah, I've always figured my necktie, you know, I always keep my necktie available, and, you know, I know they haven't said you can't wear a necktie on the plane, but if I see somebody in the seat ahead of me lighting their shoe, I know where that necktie is going to be used.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the problems with the screening process is that, to be frank, it's been uneven.
Yeah.
And it's caused consternation amongst the traveling public. And at the same time, if you wanted to keep confidence in air transport, you had to embrace many of these timely changes. I mean, the public, after the horrific events of 9/11, they needed to be confident about getting back into the air. And that would have taken our major airlines economically to bankruptcy had we not put in place these screening procedures.
Let's talk a little bit about the state of the Markey Lynch Democratic primary for the Senate. And if you want, the three-way GOP race. Do you have a preference yourself?
Well, I'm very friendly with Ed and Steve, and I've known them both for a long period of time, and I've had a good, strong relationship. They're both very, very decent human beings. I must say I know Mike Sullivan.
He's the Republican side. Yeah. He's the former prosecutor.
He was former U.S. attorney in Massachusetts. He was a Bush appointee. And I can't say that I know the other two. So I'm assuming, based upon Scott Brown's decision to defer a Senate race, that Republicans have come to the conclusion that winning a statewide office in Massachusetts right now is very difficult, considering that Elizabeth Warren beat Senator Brown by almost 8 points. That's a pretty substantial victory for a challenger.
Sure.
And I think the result of which is it has caused Republicans to rethink their commitment to these statewide races until they retool their message, until they have a better chance to focus their base. So my sense is whoever wins the Democratic primary is going to be the U.S. Senator from Massachusetts. And I think that the evidence is very supportive of that conclusion.
Well, can you help us, since you're a colleague of both of them, understand the differences between the two
guys?
Well,
yes. I mean, I think that you can see that a Democratic primary in the state is fairly left. There's no question about that. It tends to be the very committed, the very enthusiastic that show. And I also would say with, you know, some accuracy, liberal communities show up in primaries. I've represented Northampton for 20 years, and I really loved the town. And even when they disagreed with me on an issue, they voted for me by substantial margins. But what was interesting is even though you would have other communities in the valley who would have a bigger population than Northampton, when you saw voter turnout, you could see the difference. Because, once again, it's the committed in the base who are going to show up.
So it's Markey is to the left of Lynch.
I think Ed is to the left of Lynch. And I think that Ed is probably more to the left of Lynch now that Scott Brown is not in the race, to be very frank.
Interesting. Interesting.
That would allow you, incidentally, by way of explanation, it would allow you to move a bit more left only because you didn't have to get back to the center to confront who would have been a major challenge, Senator Brown.
Right. Right. And, of course, there are those people who think that Brown is just saving his ammunition to run for governor.
Well, he took a different course of action this week that I think that surprised the political establishment.
Did.
By signing on with Nixon Peabody, and the result of which is, I think, if I could speculate, that he has probably, for the near future, given up on electoral politics. You know, one of the things that people don't realize, even in this time of public anger at Congress, there was a study that was just conducted, published over the last, Ruth Marcus notes it in her Washington Post column, that when people measure the amount of time that members of Congress put in, she was using the numbers based on this study of 60 to 70 hours a week. And I think that's entirely accurate. You don't have holidays off. You're marching in a parade. You're visiting a soldier's home. You're participating in events all of the time. Seldom do you ever have a Friday or Saturday night off. And I think that there's a part of it that the people don't come to see anymore where they once did. And it's the amount of time you put in, even if you don't always get satisfactory answers to the political problems that confront the country or the economic problems. It is a significant time commitment. And Ed Markey and Steve Lynch have both said to me they're amazed at the size of the state of Massachusetts. And we're only the 14th largest state in the country.
Talk to me about immigration reform, Richie Neal. I see some signs among Republicans. We only have 2 minutes. I'm sorry about this. But I see some signs about Republicans. They're rethinking their position.
Well, I voted for the DREAM Act. I'm a supporter of it. And I think that Bush got it right, and I think Obama has it right. Their simple suggestion is this: register, learn English, and get in line. And I look at the opponents of that, and I don't know what in that statement that I just offered they could oppose. The America needs that labor. We need the H-1B visas to be extended. The idea that we educate all of these, many of these immigrants at MIT or Harvard or BU or in the Boston area, Tufts, and we send them back as soon as they've secured that engineering degree is ridiculous. And I think that what's happening across the Midwest, Alan, is the transformation of many of these old industrial towns. And it's the meatpacking houses that are now being staffed by many of these immigrants or newer arrivals, the undocumented. And I also think one other consideration here, and let's be bold about it, you can't go to a restaurant without looking in the kitchen to see who's working it.
It's exactly right. So do you think something will happen?
I do. I think there's something here that we can wrap our arms around. I think there's a little bit of dancing on the edges. But what happened in the last election is very imperative for Republicans. It's as simple as this. Bush was recruiting Hispanics in record numbers because culturally they tend to be very conservative. They tend to be Roman Catholics, or they tend to be evangelicals. And they were there for Bush when he was governor of Texas, and he almost 44% of them voted for him when he ran for president. And the last time around, Democratic candidate Barack Obama got 70% of the Hispanic vote. And I think that everybody sees a number like 70% and they say, time to retool.
Richie Neal, always great to talk to you. When we come back, I want to ask you about my favorite thing to talk to you about, and that's one of my favorite countries in the world, Ireland.
Oh, glad to discuss it.